doing? It's Zach Kowski.
Adam Henry.
Bobby Jones.
Jeff Jarrett.
Joe Siddle.
TJ Laramie. And
Holy Mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
Yo, what up, everybody? My name is Victor Moore, and thank you for streaming or downloading this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports radio show and podcast, live on CJAM 99.1 FM every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. and replays on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. You can catch every single episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast, of course, wherever you're listening to it right now. We are available on every major podcast platform, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, so give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be. But we will catch you up on how to access all that, as well as the podcast again at the end of the show, as we always do. But today is Thursday, September 12th, 2019, and it's episode 162 of Wind City Sports. Hockey season is right around the corner. We have training camp starting very soon, and the Windsor Spitfires are actually in preseason action as they just played the Flint Firebirds last night at the WFCU Center. But we're going to keep the hockey theme rolling here on Wind City Sports with another former NHLer and OHLer, actually born here in Windsor, who eventually went on to move out to Toronto and play minor out there, played junior in the OHL, and then went on to the NHL to play with the Boston Bruins, unfortunately, and had a long pro career in other leagues as well as the NHL. He's been all around the world, and he has a very interesting story. He called from Boston. It's Bruce Shoebottom on Wind City Sports this week, so we have a great conversation with him. Reminisce about the old days, tell some good stories, and just get caught up with another Windsor boy as we normally do here on Wind City Sports. And we're about to jump over to that interview with Bruce, but first I got to tell you a little bit about the Travis Roy Foundation. The Travis Roy Foundation is dedicated to enhancing the life of individuals with spinal cord injuries and their families by providing adaptive equipment and to find a cure through increasing funding of research, resulting in self-reliance and the ability to be as independent as possible. On October 20th, 1995, just 11 seconds into his first ever shift for Boston University men's ice hockey team, 20-year-old Roy slid headfirst into the boards after missing a check. The awkward impact with the boards resulted in Roy cracking his fourth and fifth vertebrae and leaving him a quadriplegic. 2 years later, Travis started the foundation to benefit others with similar injuries. He's actually good friends with today's guest, Bruce Shoebottom, and for more information or to make a donation, visit travisroyfoundation.org. That's travisroyfoundation.org. But now, without further ado, let's send it over to his buddy, Bruce Shoebottom, the former Boston Bruin. Here we go.
So on the phone right now, we have a former Boston Bruin drafted 47th overall to the LA Kings in 1983. Played four seasons with the Peterborough Petes, also in the OHL, but he was born right here in Windsor, Ontario. Bruce Shoebottom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So, born here in Windsor, were you raised here too, or was it just like a cup of coffee?
No, I was born in Windsor, and my dad moved to Toronto, you know, with just job relocation. But, we've got good memories of growing up in a couple places in Windsor and then moving to Mississauga.
Okay.
But, we get back there occasionally, so we were there a few years back with the Bruins alumni.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I was going to ask if you had any connections down here also, or if you, you know, kind of remembered again, like, where you grew up and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely have some great memories. The one thing that I don't see, the Windsor Arena, the Bruins alumni played one of the final games at the arena before I think they changed it into a grocery store. And my mom was there, and I believe it or not, I scored a hat trick. So I think I got the last hat trick in the old barn.
That's pretty wicked.
It was very, very cool arena. And I'd love to see what it looks like today.
Yeah, well, the barn's up in the air right now. Actually, the school board ended up purchasing it, but they were going to turn it into a complex, like a sport complex, but it's kind of on the hold right now. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's basically just sitting there, unfortunately.
Does anybody ever get inside of it to take a look, or is it just one of those kind of abandoned things now, or does it still look like a hockey arena?
Right now, from the outside, it looks like a hockey arena, but, like, the city used to own it after the Spits left there, and I actually used to play there as a kid, when I played midget and stuff, we would play there, the university would play there. Then they sold it off to the school board, and the school board was going to turn it into some sort of complex or a new school or something, but something with the regulations, like the building is holding it up. So the inside of it, I have no idea what it's like. I don't think anyone set foot in there probably in a long time, unless, you know, the school board is going around doing stuff.
Well, I think you should get somebody in there to do an exploration, see if it still looks like a hockey arena. It is.
Absolutely. That thing could be exposed on Hockey Night in Canada, man.
No, it would be good. It would be good. You see a lot of good content up there, and there's a lot of content of the auditorium in Buffalo before they finally hit the wrecked ball. But it was pretty cool to see the 1970s, you know, that was just time.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of history there. I hope if anything, before they decide to do whatever, maybe do like an open house little tour or something, you know, your last little chance to go see the barn.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be a great idea.
So when did you start playing hockey? Did you start playing hockey here in Windsor or Mississauga?
I started skating when I was very young in Windsor, and then youth hockey started when I was in Mississauga with Mississauga Reps and the MTHL. There's a lot of good hockey in Toronto. It's real competitive.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, you know, went through the Ontario Hockey League, just like, you know, the majority of people in Ontario. It's the logical path to professional hockey, and you know, for the most part, it was a good experience.
Absolutely, man. So obviously, like you had mentioned, the hockey system in Toronto and GTA is just so strong. So from there, were you drafted to the Petes, or?
Yeah, I think it was I believe the draft year that we went through, Steve Eisen was picked and Dave Reed was picked, and then I was picked in the third round as an underage. So we had some pretty good teams at Peterborough and some, as you can see, very good company.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to get into next, because you played with a lot of well-known players throughout your career, but in Peterborough playing with Steve Yzerman. Did you guys know he was going to be that much of a superstar as a kid? I mean, obviously you played those 2 years, then went right to the Red Wings, but were you on the ice with him like, holy moly, this kid's good?
Yeah, no, I think the thing that set Steve apart from other players is that, you know, like his hockey IQ was pretty high. Like he was playing at a different level, even in junior, than, you know, most players did. Like he was, you know, real advanced for his age, and that's why he was able to, you know, get onto the NHL so quickly and have a pretty good career. It takes a long time. Hockey, as much as people think it's a relatively simple game, it isn't. There's a lot of subtle things that you have to learn. You know, like the sooner you can pick up and get the experience, then the better off you'll be. And it took me a few years to kind of pick up on what I had to do to be successful, and I'm fortunate I was able to get with some good people in Boston and play some games in the NHL.
Absolutely, and we're going to get into that too. But there's a lot to learn on and off the ice, especially as a kid playing hockey, right? And you, again, coming from Mississauga, moving up all the way to Peterborough there, how was that for you?
Yeah, no, it's the Ontario Hockey League, you know, it's like, it's the mini NHL, you know, they produce the most first-round draft choices. You look at teams like, you know, the Spitfires now, it's owned by my friend. And they got, you know, London Knights, which is, you know, it's been like a real high-performing place for guys that, you know, want to play hockey in advance. You know, it's definitely a growing and learning experience. You know, I've been influenced by being in New England for a few years. There is some people that think that it might be a little better experience for the kids to spend a little more time, you know, at home growing up and maturing with their families before they, you know, kind of jump both feet into the developmental hockey world. It just, you know, just depends on the person. You know, I think there's a lot of kids that might be well served by, you know, spending a little more time, you know, developing themselves and then going to college and advancing that way, whereas, you know, the OHL, you know, they basically can't get you working early enough to, you know, get you ready to the NHL draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big topic now too with kids in hockey, is what do they do in the off season? Do they keep training? Do they play other sports? You know, that's a debate with coaches and whatnot right now.
Yeah, no, I've been in Toronto just last winter, and I've seen, like, you know, the level of intensity that the parents display. And I think, you know, they might be, you know, just for not just trying to develop hockey players, try to develop, you know, well-rounded young people, you know, like let them experience other things and let them, you know, social things and different things rather than doing hockey 24/7, you know, throughout the whole calendar year.
Yeah.
It might be just positive to let, you know, let all, you know, pieces of the personality and pieces of the people develop rather than just focusing on the hockey.
Yeah, everyone's different, like you said, and you're recruiting the player, the person, not only the player, right? So.
Yeah, no, my perspective, now is a lot different than it was 10 and 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I hope people reach out to me to try to help them with their kids that are, 16 or 18 years old. I always try to give them honest advice, move them in the right direction.
Absolutely, man. So let's go back a little bit. As mentioned, you drafted to the Kings, but following your OHL stint, you started off in New Haven with the Nighthawks, their affiliate. Only played 6 games there before you traded to the Washington Capitals. And it wouldn't be another 2 years before cracking the NHL with the Boston Bruins. So what's the story about coming through the ranks, minor pro, and ultimately landing in Boston and getting a chance in the show, going from LA to Washington to Boston?
It was an interesting story. Like, when I was drafted by the Los Angeles Kings, I don't think the, scouting and the developing and the, the amount of work they put into the hockey was, that big. And when the Kings drafted me, I think immediately after picking me up on the draft floor, they were trying to trade me. Mm. They didn't, that information was shared to me by Dick Todd, years later. At the time I didn't realize that, it's a business and you're a commodity. And, the LA Kings, as much as, I spent a couple seasons, in their system, before getting traded, they really, they weren't really committed to me as a player. And they just, basically they were immediately shopping me to other teams. So Washington wanted me. Eventually they got me. It's just, you got to try to be in the right place at the right time with the right people. And it wasn't until Boston that it didn't all come together for me.
Mm-hmm. And you're calling from the Boston area now, still involved in the Alumni Association, so I'm sure you must have loved the city to kind of wind up back there and settle down, right?
Yeah, no, I played 4 seasons here. It was probably the best 4 seasons I played. I was in the American Hockey League, majority of the time, and I would get called up. I'd drive back and forth between Portland, Maine, and Boston. I probably, when I was playing those 4 seasons, the call-ups were a lot easier than they are now, and I probably drove back and forth, 10 or 15 times, throughout the winter. You play a bad game or 2 bad games, and you get sent back to the American League, and then the team would start getting pushed around, guys would get hurt, and then you get called back up. So I just was, very fortunate to be on some outstanding, teams with the Bruins. Like, if there was 18 players on the roster, I was very fortunate to be the 18th player. And they went to the Stanley Cup Finals 1 year. We got to play in the playoffs. And, more importantly, I met some great people that I'm still friends with to this day. And just like I said, right place, right time. Made some good friends and good connections, and just thought this was the place to stay.
Absolutely, man. That's pretty awesome. And as much as I might be a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, I got to admit that Boston Bruins had a great legendary run there in the 80s and 90s. And let's talk about that team a bit. The players, first off. Cam Neely, Ray Bourque, just to name a few. What was that locker room like?
Yeah, there was, they speak about, the different levels of intensity that, different organizations have. And when I was playing in the Bruins and at the old Boston Garden, expectations were high. Terry O'Reilly was the coach, and if we had a bad first period, the coach would come in the room, and the ceiling would get raised, the paint would get peeled off the walls, and he would he wasn't afraid to let you know how he felt about your performance. And like I said, it was expectations were high, for whatever reason, the teams were able to excel. And you get sent back to the American Hockey League, and it's almost like a breath of fresh air sometimes, because it's a whole different amount of scrutiny and amount of eyes upon you. But when you're there, you really gotta, you can't take a shift off or a game off, because it's just it's too important, so they had good teams and good management, good coaches. Even good trainers, there's still some guys. I got hurt a few times while I was there. And you know, it's part of the game. But, you know, like, there's definitely some great people in the organization.
I'm sure that time has to be pretty cherishable to you, too, being in the NHL, right?
Yeah, you know, like, it's, you try to be fair about it. Like, you know, there's guys, you know, that played different levels of careers, you know, X number of games played or X number of achievements. You know, I spent the majority of my time, you know, bouncing around the American Hockey League, the International League, and some other leagues. And, you know, there's some guys that when you talk about, you know, hockey in the rearview mirror, like, all they want to talk about is, you know, NHL, what I did in the NHL. Well, you know, like, hey, myself, I'm happy with some of the, I played in Fort Wayne, you know, in the International League. Unbelievably great city. You know, had a great time, had a great season. You know, I played in Oklahoma City. I played in different places. Like, I'm just as happy to talk about, you know, some of the minor league stops, whereas other people, you know, everywhere their mouth has to be about the, you know, 70 or 50 games they played in the NHL.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to go next, because even back then there was a lot more high-level leagues, so there's a lot more places to go too, right?
Yeah, I know that everyone, like, there's a lot of hockey media out there and a lot of content, and there's, you know, like, when I played, there was a lot of guys that were in the American Hockey League that were, you know, probably legitimate NHL players, but they were in the wrong organization at the wrong time, and they just couldn't break through, you know, so that, you know, at different times with expansion, there's more jobs available, but, you know, the years that I was in the American Hockey League, like, it was pretty good hockey. And it was, you know, as much as it was definitely a step slow in the NHL, it was a good product. And, you know, it's, like I said, it keeps, you know, you get really great hockey cities like Rochester and Springfield and different places, and they just keep on, you know, keep on moving forward with hockey because you've got some heritage there.
Yeah.
So, but there's, yeah, it's definitely a good, you know, played 400 games in the American Hockey League, and, you know, it was a good experience.
Yeah, it's all about what you take out of it. If you connected with people there, had a good time, and again, just played at that high level, and got paid to play hockey, it's for sure it was a good time in your life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So pretty much after that run with Boston, you went to the I for a year and then came back to the A, as you mentioned, with the Rochester Americans, who were a Buffalo Sabres affiliate. So did you have like an AHL contract, or did you sign with Buffalo?
No, I would have liked to have signed with Buffalo and had a chance to, you know, get called up, but I was on an American Hockey League agreement at that time. And, you know, it was definitely, things are changing. You ride the roller coaster up in hockey and you ride it back down. At that point for me, you know, I was definitely looking to things beyond hockey, or, you know, what was going to happen after hockey. Rochester was a great city, you know, and I enjoyed playing there, but, you know, at that point for me, my focus was kind of going in a different direction. And then, you know, you still ended up playing for at least three or four more seasons after that. But, the drive to, you know, play at a high level and get the NHL was kind of in the rearview mirror for me.
Yeah, I'm sure it kind of gets to you, too, after a while, right?
Yeah, you know, you can only, like, keep your foot on the gas for so long.
Yeah.
Like, it's a short window of opportunities, you know, to play at that high level. You know, guys that, for whatever reason, they have the focus and they have the ability to stay there for a long time. But for me, you know, I was never that strong a skater. You know, I was a physical player. The fighting and everything was a big component of my game. And, you know, once you got tired of fighting, you know, you weren't really that much of an asset to an organization. So they'd probably look at other people before they'd look at you.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's got a role, right?
Yeah, back then it was really defined, you know, and in some ways it wasn't always a positive thing. Like, they didn't really, there was some places I played when they really didn't, you know, encourage you to develop your hockey skills or get better as a player. They just basically wanted you for that, you know, 5 minutes of the game when they wanted physical play. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that's when you get cast into that role, and it's pretty hard to break out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you embrace it and do the most you can with it. And then, you know, like I said, you just try to get out of hockey and get on with life.
Yeah, as long as you make it out alive.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, like, there's definitely, you see some different leagues now. You see guys, you know, trying to retire at the proper age, and it's hard to quit because, you know, you really don't know anything else in your life. But you do have to try to get out at the right time because getting hurt is, you know, it catches up with you, you know, and it's, I've been fortunate that I've been able to, you know, achieve a pretty good level of life after hockey and enjoy myself. And as much as I got hurt a few times pretty bad, you know, for the most part, knock on wood, I've been able to get past it.
Yeah. I mean, you like to see those superstars play for 20 years or whatever, but at the same time, I like those guys that were kind of under the radar that went on to success after hockey, and you see them on TV or whatever now. I like those kind of stories as well.
Yeah, no, it's you know, that's one of the things that you kind of touched upon when we spoke about the kids playing youth hockey growing up in Ontario. Like, you know, there's you're going to play hockey for maybe 5 to 10 seasons pro tops, you know, and you've got a whole, you know, life to live, you know, whether part of hockey or outside of hockey, and just try to, you know, develop yourself as a well-rounded person so you can, you know, it's, you're not going to be just a one-dimensional thing where hockey's your whole existence.
Yeah.
You really don't have anything else to bring to the table.
True. All right, well, not to change the subject too much here, but I did read once that you were actually arrested in the AHL for going in the stands, and as we were talking about the Americans there, I think you just played the one game, so that, was that it?
No, it's funny because, like, with the amount of, I think when that information got out online or whatever, we're just in the infancy of, you know, real-time media and online content, and that story kind of got blown out of proportion. I think what they're referencing is there was a night in Utica when the fighting got, it was you know, a typical game in Utica in the American Hockey League. And we had a fan that, you know, he was, as we were getting kicked out of the game, he soaked me and another player, Graham Townsend, with beer. And so, you know, we, most times you let it go, but for whatever reason, we went back into the locker room and grabbed a, you know, the hugest container of Gatorade we could find. We went back out and soaked him. He actually jumped out of the stands and came right into the locker room after us. That was the extent of it. You know, there wasn't nobody got arrested. There wasn't any, you know, further altercation. But for whatever reason, the story kind of morphed into its own world. But,
yeah, okay.
You know, I didn't spend a night in jail. I didn't get arrested. But it was, you know, that was just a typical night in the American Hockey League back in the late 80s.
That's why they call it the jungle.
Yeah, no, Utica was a jungle, you know, and we ended up going up to play some games for Scotiabank with the NHL alumni. And there was a couple players that played in Adirondack, and we were talking about different cities we went to and different experiences, and Utica came up a couple times as being one of those really blue-collar, crazy cities that if you spend any time there, you're definitely going to have a few stories come out of it.
That's awesome. Well, I definitely had to ask about that. I actually found it from Spittin' Chicklets, that guy in Boston, RA, retweeted it.
Yeah, no, Spittin' Chicklets and the Barstool Gang are pretty big in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
I've bumped into them a few times. I've never gone on their show or done anything with them, but they put up pretty good content.
Oh, absolutely. And so to kind of roll on with your career here, there's one thing I want to kind of get into. So you played a few more years after the Rochester American there in some West Coast leagues and seemed to wrap it up in 98. But help me with this one. You came back to the St. George de... this is too long. It's a senior A team. It had to have been a
Quebec. Yeah, no, you can laugh about it. It is pretty funny. You know, I was, for all intents and purposes, I was pretty much out of hockey at that point. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I have 4 kids, you know, so we're, you're making that transition out of hockey, and I don't know how they managed to get my home phone number, but my wife would tell me, like, hey, there's some guy in broken French keeps on calling the house looking for you. What is this about? I said, I don't know, but, you know, next time he calls, they'll put me on. So, you know, they'll throw some crazy money at you to go back and play a game or two. And at first I thought it was, you know, it was pretty comical. But then it got to the point where it was, you know, about 6 weeks before Christmas, and they threw some money at me. And I said, geez, you know, that would buy a lot of Christmas presents for the kids. So I went back and I did the best I could. I don't think, you know, fighting 20-year-old kids when you're in your mid-30s is probably going to turn out too good for anybody. But, you know, I got out of there alive, and we can laugh about it now. But it was, they just kept ringing the house until they finally got me. And I went up there and had some fun. And, like I said, got out of there with my head still on my shoulders.
Well, that's one thing I had to ask about, because it was like a few years after you had seemingly retired. And again, like the internet, you know, you can't trust anything out there, as we talked about before.
It happened, and I was just like, I had friends here in Portland, and they were like trying to talk me out of it. They were like, "You're out of your mind. You shouldn't do that," you know, because, and they were probably right. But it, you know, like I said, it was fun, but like I said, and it was crazy. But like I said, it's. Fighting, you know, like that is a young man's game. It's a lot of fun when you're like 18 to 23, 25, but when you're in your 30s, like, you know, you're just like, what am I doing out here?
So, but HockeyDB only has you listed as playing one game and only receiving, like, the only score that you have there is a 5-minute penalty. Is that true? You only played one game, one fighter?
That was pretty much the extent of it. I think we were supposed to go to Quebec City and play the following day, and I was just like, I'm good, I'm just I've had enough, you know. I got my game in. I played a total of maybe 4 or 5 shifts total, and like I said, it was just another experience that we can laugh about, you know, and tell stories about. But it was like I said, it was fun, a couple bucks, you know, but it was definitely just a footnote on a crazy, crazy 12 years career.
What a way to wrap it up.
Yeah, no, really, I don't know if it's you'd like to go out winning a championship or whatever, but, you know, like, I think that was probably more suited to me.
Go around with a belt around your waist.
Yeah, trying at least, anyways.
That's great. Good story. So to kind of wrap it up, as mentioned, you're still living in the Boston area there and involved in the Alumni Association. Seems like you guys do a lot of charity games and events and probably more. So tell us about what you're doing with them and what else you do to keep busy in life after hockey.
Yeah, well, we've got a really great alumni organization here in Boston. It's ran by Rick Medelson, who's, anybody that's ever played with Nifty knows he's a great guy. Probably, you know, there might be a good format, like, he's, you know, Nifty belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame. A lot of it's come up a few times in Boston, it's come up a few times in Toronto. I'd love to see his name added to the list of inductees for the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, based on his numbers and what he's done in hockey, you know, I think he belongs there. Hopefully, you know, some of the people in the NHL can see fit to, you know, do the right thing and try to get him on the induction ballot for the next Hockey Hall of Fame list. And, we got some great people. We got Terry O'Reilly still plays. We got Mike Motto plays, Boston guy. We're trying to bring some younger guys in to play with us because we're not getting any faster out there. You know, we got some guys that are in their late 40s, early 50s playing. But we still have good goalies. And we get out there and raise money for youth hockey and for charity. And, you know, we have a good time. You know, we get up to the Maritimes. We get up to Ontario, Vermont. And, I think we got 30 games scheduled for this year. So I'm going to have to start training pretty soon.
It keeps a little fun in your life, too, I'm sure. Right?
Yeah, it's a nice break sometimes. You know, the travel, it gets a little harder. As you get older, you don't really feel like, you know, driving around for 2 or 3 hours in a car, but you do your best, and you know, we always try to have fun.
Absolutely. Well, I always like to catch up with the Windsor boys and girls that have made it to the big city, so thank you for taking the time to do this, man.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, Travis Roy Foundation is a great cause. I appreciate you donating some money on behalf of for doing this interview. And for any of your listeners, you know, if you're, it'd be great if you could make a donation to Travis, you know, stem cell research and spinal therapy research is my number one cause. And like I said, it's, you can promote it on your website and get some awareness out there. That would be great.
All right, there you have it. Bruce Schubot. I'm a former Boston Bruin from right here in Windsor, Ontario, on the Wind City Sports Podcast. Thank you very much to Bruce for taking the time to do that. And thank you to the Boston Bruins Alumni Association for being instrumental in setting up that interview. Without further ado, though, I'm just going to break down a little bit of sports news, and we're going to kick things off with our Windsor Lancers Athletes of the Week via GoLancers.ca, as you may hear or have heard on the Wind City Sports Radio Show. This week, from the women's and men's soccer teams, it's Jessica Paglia and Tanner Page. Jessica scored 2 goals in just 60 minutes of play in the Lancers' dominant 5-0 victory in the home opener on Saturday night at Alumni Field. Meanwhile, Tanner opened the scoring for the Lancers in both of the Lancers' dominating victories over Algoma this weekend and finished the weekend with 3 goals in just 2 games, bringing his season total to 4 in 4 games played. So congratulations to Jessica and Tanner on becoming the Windsor Lancers Athletes of the Week. The Windsor AKO Fratmen lost their first game of the season on Saturday. AKO, which did not allow a point in its first 2 games of the season, lost a close 41-34 on the road to the London Beefeaters, who put up over 400 yards in passing and more than 500 yards in total offense. Former Windsor Spitfires GM Warren Reichel has been hired as the head coach of the Barry Colts. Few in the hockey world could have expected Reichel to launch his coaching career at the age of 52, and even fewer would have expected his first head coaching post would come in the OHL's Barry Colts. So more information on the Windsor Spitfires and news on the Wind City Sports Radio Show later today from results from last night. But it's a big weekend for the Windsor Lancers, as we have the soccer teams and football teams continuing to run through their season both at home and on the road this weekend. But we also have men's hockey and volleyball starting up tomorrow. Go to GoLancers.ca for more information. But that is it this week on Wind City Sports. My name is Drake DeMore, and I'm here every Thursday with a brand new episode of the podcast and a new edition of the Wind City Sports Radio Show live on CJAM 99.1 FM at the University of Windsor every Thursday at 12:30. But you can catch replays on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Feature a little more music and some more local sports news and results and upcoming events and much more. And we highlight a few moments from our podcast interviews. This week would be Bruce Schubottom, where we have a brand new podcast every Thursday as well on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are found. Just simply search up Wind City Sports. Wind City is all one word, and you should be able to find us on any podcast site or app, as well as social media across the board. We have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Simply search up Wind City Sports or at Wind City underscore sports. You'll be able to find us. And you can find me, Drake DeMore, on Instagram and Twitter, at Drake DeMore. But until next week, I think that's it. Smell you later.